Roundup from the Salt Lake Tribune and KCPW. Heard around the state on Utah Public Radio, I'm Roger McDonough. Coming up on the show, Mitt Romney gets sworn in as Utah's newest senator, but not before he ignites a fire within the Republican Party. Also, the new .05 law nets its first arrest, and later in the show, changes to the temple ceremony for members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And joining me today to talk about these stories, Salt Lake Tribune senior managing editor Matt Canham is here. And welcome back, Matt.
Hello.
We've also got on the phone from Washington, Salt Lake Tribune Washington Bureau Chief Thomas Burr. And thanks for making time this morning, Tommy.
Good morning, Roger.
Listeners, we will be starting with Senator Mitt Romney and his criticism of the president. You can call us with your questions and comments. The phone number is 801-355-8255. Or you can post them at sltrib.com. Mitt Romney is now Senator Mitt Romney. He was sworn in yesterday, but that was, by no means the biggest news that he made this week. And I want to get to his swearing in and what that represents. But first, let's tackle the sort of grenade that Romney threw into the middle of the Republican Party, and that might be overstating it a little bit. But he did cause a stir by rekindling some of his past criticism of President Donald Trump. Matt Canham, senior managing editor of the Salt Lake Tribune. What did Romney say and in what venue?
So he wrote an op-ed for the Washington Post, and in this opinion column, he went after the president's character. He went after his leadership. He went after his honesty. And he went after his foreign policy. And it's some of the things that he has said previously, but it was all wrapped up, and it was the harshest criticism he has had of President Donald Trump since his famed 2016 speech at Kingsbury Hall at the University of Utah, where he called him a fake and a phony. He didn't use that kind of flashy language, but essentially he said that the president has not risen to the mantle of the office. He said that with the nation so divided, resentful, and angry, presidential leadership in qualities of character is indispensable. And it is in this province where the incumbent's shortfall has been most glaring. It made it very clear that he doesn't think the president has shown the character that we need in our chief executive.
Okay, so criticism of a character, but what, I mean, is he pointing to specific instances and saying this is where those shortfalls are coming from in his op-ed in the Washington Post?
He talked a little bit about the month of December with the loss of Defense Secretary Jim Mattis and Chief of Staff John Kelly, both of whom were pushed out by the president. He talked about the quick withdrawal from Syria, where we left some of our allies, particularly the Kurds, in the lurch. But mostly, I mean, it was broader than that. It was far broader than that. He had this list of things that he thought that, you know, the president has attacked our vital institutions, he said, including the free press. He talked about the rule of law and strong churches and the responsible corporations and unions, and felt that the very underpinning of our society the president has attacked here and there. He didn't spell out what individual things he's talking about, but it was a pretty broad range attack on the president.
Were these criticisms that Romney had been launching, you know, at the president during his Senate campaign here in Utah?
It was much weaker. It was more individualized. During his campaign. And in the months or in the weeks since his election, he would take shots at individual actions, how the president responded to the murder of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi. He attacked that. But this is essentially saying the president is a bad leader. That's a, you know, you don't usually hear that from a member of the president's party. He ducked the questions constantly during the campaign. When asked, what about your speech where you called him a fake and a phony? He said he wanted to talk about the future. And now, just, you know, a day and a half before Tommy saw that swearing in, he put his cards on the table and said, I don't think the president's been a good leader.
So why, I guess this is a question in either of you, Tommy, maybe I'll bring you into this conversation if you can answer this question. Why now? Why is Romney, you know, launching this attack at this moment?
It's a good question. And I spoke to Senator Romney yesterday. But let's backtrack a little bit. They've had an on and off relationship for a long time. In 2012, Trump endorsed Romney, and Romney flew to Las Vegas to accept the endorsement. In 2016, as Matt mentioned, Romney excoriated him for, you know, his actions, his rhetoric. in the primaries in 2016. But then later that year, after Trump won the presidency, Romney flies up to Trump's golf resort and sits down for dinner with him, was considered for Secretary of State. Then, of course, Romney's been, occasionally tweeting criticism about the president. In this case, there was two things that really kind of surprised me about this. One was the tone. This was more searing than we've seen before. And two was the timing. And so I asked Senator Romney, why now? And essentially, he wanted to set the tone. He wanted to say, this is, and signal what he's going to be like in the Senate. Part of the op-ed was, Romney agrees with Trump on tax reform, on criminal justice reform, on getting conservative judges on the bench. But he's going to not just, sit back and let the president, say things that he thinks hurts America, Americans and America's standing in the world. Romney's not going to, as he told me, respond to every tweet, to come out every day and, whack the president for something that he did. But he's also not going to be a backbencher and just sit around and accept it.
I want to remind listeners that they can join this conversation. Call us at 801-355-8255. That's 801-355-TALK. Has President Trump responded to what Romney said? And I don't know if that's a Canham or a Burr question.
I'll pass up the Canham. Okay.
He did, and I would say it was not as searing, using the word time he did, as I would expect from the president. When he has been attacked by people in the past, he gives as well as he gets. His response was, here we go with Mitt Romney, but so fast. Question will be, is he a flake? Referencing Jeff Flake, the former senator from Arizona who has been critical of him. He said... Trump said that he would prefer that Mitt focus on border security and things where they can agree, and that he should be a good team player.
And the president also noted that, that Romney lost the presidency and Trump won it, which Romney's response was, yep, you're right.
That's true.
You know, that mention of border security is interesting. Tommy, isn't Senator Romney in favor of building a wall along the southern border along the lines of what President Trump wants?
You know, it's weird. I've been calling Romney governor for so long that it's really going to be hard for me to call him senator.
Right.
Romney's position is that he does believe there needs to be, a border wall, that there needs to be some physical fence, new technologies to protect the border. He's not sure yet. And we're seeing how this settles down in with the government shutdown.
Right.
But Romney's not sure what vehicle is the best for that, if he would support a bill that doesn't have the border wall as long as it's addressed later. He's just not sure, and given, he's been on the job for, less than 24 hours now.
I mean, is he as gung-ho about the wall that he would make it a sticking point, in government funding? This is the crux of the partial government shutdown, as you pointed out, Tommy.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like this is the hill he's going to die on. This is not his main issue. And Romney, in my interview with him yesterday, he was talking about, issues of public lands and wildfires in the West, and trying to stick the point that, he is a senator from Utah. He's not the president, and he's not a leader in Congress, so he's going to focus on things, he can get done. But the big question is whether he'll join Susan Collins, Cory Gardner, to vote for a package that doesn't include wall funding. I guess we'll have to wait and see. Romney flew to Paris last night to attend his granddaughter's wedding. And there are no votes scheduled in the Senate, so we'll have to wait till next week to see what happens.
Okay. I want to go back to that editorial for just a moment. This is something that he wrote 2 days before he became senator, as you pointed out. It was an editorial that was upsetting to others in the GOP who don't want to damage their standard bearer with a primary challenge, and some people saw this editorial as sort of bolstering the idea of a primary challenge to President Donald Trump. Who knows what the future holds. But before we actually go into that, Tommy, would that primary challenge come from Mitt Romney?
He said no, essentially hell no. He probably more say heck no, excuse me. But it doesn't sound like he has any interest. He says he's run twice before. It didn't work out so well. He has no interest in running. But then he said something kind of interesting, which was, but there may be a primary challenge. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Essentially, Romney's not sure if he's going to suggest Trump run again. Romney's not sure if he would endorse somebody else running against Trump in 2020. And so, you know, he's kind of leaving that door open, but not for himself.
Okay. But, you know, our new senator calling out the president for his character or his lack of presidential character. How did others in the GOP respond to that, or just others in Washington, D.C. and Matt Canham?
You know, the Republican apparatus is built to protect the president, just like the Democratic apparatus was built to protect Barack Obama when he was in the White House. So the Republican National Committee, which awkwardly enough is led by Mitt Romney's niece, Rona McDaniel, criticized Romney's comment, saying that for a freshman senator to attack the president as his first act feeds into what the Democrats and media want. It's disappointing and unproductive. There were the pundits on Fox News, which is the conservative TV station, has blasted Romney for days now over this, you know, saying that he's undercutting Republican aims. Romney's going to get a lot of grief from this. But the one thing that I think it really shows, and Tommy has pointed this out in his reporting, Mitt Romney might be a freshman senator, but he is probably the most well-known Republican senator there is.
Right. He goes in.
Can I jump in there real fast?
Sure, of course, Tommy.
It's an interesting point to make that in all the criticism Romney got from Republicans, there were very few that said he was wrong. They more attacked him for, you know, you should be attacking Democrats, not the president. You should be focusing on this, not that. None of them really, even Rona McDaniels didn't come out and say, you know, how dare you, the president has the highest character or something like that. They didn't really say he was said something bad, wrong.
You know, I want to actually, that brings me to, I'm wondering if, and this could be a question for either Tommy or Matt, but has Romney weighed in on the Mueller investigation? And I'm just thinking about the senator's attacks on the president's character. And before the new year, we heard from the president's former personal lawyer that, you know, he had paid off someone that Trump had an affair with to keep the scandal out of the eyes of the voting public, and that he did that at the president's behest. That's not actually the Mueller investigation, but the work of prosecutors who Mueller referred the case to. But if we're talking about questions of character, there's still a lot that Romney could say. Is the Mueller investigation sort of no-go territory for Republicans in Washington? Tommy?
Well, you know, I think Senator Romney has said several times and tweeted about this that he thinks the Mueller investigation should go forward and to its ultimate conclusion and shouldn't be hampered. There's, you know, certainly been bills put up that have not passed to protect the Mueller investigation with the House, you know, Democrats controlling the House. Like, I think we could see something passing there, but probably not in the Senate. Right now, it's just that big, you know, 800-pound elephant here in Washington. Everyone's just waiting to see what the next shoe is to drop. But, you know, the criticism by Trump supporters will still be the same against Mueller, and Democrats will try to protect him.
Well, let's turn for just a moment to the actual swearing-in of Romney that occurred yesterday, Tommy. And I guess maybe you could just set the scene for us. What happened? How was Senator Romney sworn in?
The Senate's very traditional, so they have these very, you know, set things they do. And so, you know, there were 33 senators, I think, sworn in yesterday. And so they have this kind of like, they actually go alphabetical. And so, you know, the vice president presides over the Senate. The vice president is the president of the Senate. He invites them down. They're escorted down. So for Romney, for example, it was, you know, Orrin Hatch and Mike Lee escorting him down the aisle of the Senate floor to the dais where Mike Pence, you know, has this little card that he reads, you know, with the oath. Romney had his hand on a Bible that his father had used when he was sworn in as governor of Michigan, and that Romney had used when he was sworn in as governor of Massachusetts. And they do the oath, and they say, "I do," and then they sign an official thing. And then they went to a little reception where everyone was very, you know, happy and cheering Senator Romney.
And is the moment that he's sworn in is also, I guess, the moment that Senator Orrin Hatch, after 42 years, ceased to be a senator. Is that correct?
It's kind of a weird thing, but technically we didn't have a senator for like 10 minutes.
Okay.
Because at noon, essentially, is when the Senate, the other session was gaveled out, and all the people who were senators before are no longer senators, and then they have to swear the new person in. But yeah, noon yesterday, Eastern time, is when Orrin Hatch, for the first time in 42 years, became a civilian non-elected official.
When will we know the kind of committees that Romney is going to be on, or the nitty-gritty of the work that he will do there in Washington, Tommy? Do we know any of that yet?
Yeah, we do. Actually, they announced committees last night. So okay. Senator Romney, who was very excited for this position, will be on foreign relations, which is a big one for him, especially because of his criticism of Trump's approach to foreign policy across the globe. So that's a big one. Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions, the Health Committee, is a big one. Hatch had chaired that committee before, but that has a big impact on, from health care to labor laws to how we deal with, pensions that are underfunded right now or unfunded in some ways. And I think he's also met, I'm sorry, I don't have this.
The other two are Homeland Security.
Yeah.
And Small Business.
Matt Canham, do you want to make any, before we head to a break here, which we need to do in just a moment, do you want to make any final comments on the sort of changing of the guard in Washington for Utah's, once senior and now junior senator?
I'm going to switch a little bit to go to the House really quickly.
Sure.
We also had Ben McAdams sworn in yesterday. He's our only Democrat. He replaced Mia Love. His first action was to not vote for Nancy Pelosi, who is now the House Speaker.
Right.
He instead had a protest vote for a more centrist Democrat, a sign of how he's going to try to navigate Washington.
Okay, so there's a change there in D.C. that we will definitely be keeping an eye on. 2019 gets off to, an interesting start, I guess. We need to head to a break, but Thomas Burr, Salt Lake Tribune, Washington Bureau Chief, I know that you need to run, and thanks for joining us for the first part of the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. When we come back, we will turn to Utah's new DUI law and how it's being enforced. You can call 801-355-TALK to join this conversation. You're listening to Behind the Headlines here on KCPW and Utah Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Ali Hassan, in for Tom Power. Michael Caine has appeared in over 100 films, from 60s classics like Alfie and The Italian Job, up to his recent appearances in the Batman series. His new memoir is called Blowing the Bloody Doors Off. And that is coming up on Q from PRI Public Radio International.
This afternoon at 1 o'clock on Utah Public Radio.
If life is a play in three acts, the final act is often the best.
Whoa, I'm 53 years old. I say, is my life half over? Holy smokes, like that concentrates the mind. Maybe it is time for me to reckon with this question of who am I really?
How to embrace and celebrate the third act. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRX.
Sunday morning at 9 on Utah Public Radio.
Welcome back to Behind the Headlines. I'm Roger McDonough with KCPW. I'm joined this hour by Salt Lake Tribune Senior Managing Editor Matt Canham and reporter Peyton Harkins. Welcome, Peyton. Thanks for being here.
Hey, yeah, I snuck in.
Listeners, you can join us with your questions and comments at 801-355-8255 or post them at the Behind the Headlines page at sltrib.com. Let's jump from the stories of lawmakers to the laws that they create. In this case, we'll be talking about state lawmakers or state laws. Peyton Harkins, Utah, as of just about a week ago, now has the toughest DUI law in the nation, at least when it comes to blood alcohol content, 0.05. That went into effect just in time for a New Year's Eve, or as some people call it, Amateur's Night. and I know that someone now has been arrested and could be charged with a DUI who would not have been charged with a DUI just last week. Can you tell us about that arrest?
Yeah, and it's kind of a little less straightforward than that. So basically, this individual, they pulled him over, and on his initial breathalyzer test, he blew a 0.089, which would have been, well above the threshold previously to this new law.
Yeah.
But due to some kind of wonky circumstances because of the holiday, like the closest court admissible BAC test tester nearby was closed. So it took a little bit to get this guy to a court admissible bag tester. And when he got there, he blew a 0.059, which is the new standard. And so when I was talking to the Highway Patrol about this, they said back before Sunday, this man likely wouldn't have been prosecuted, even though he failed that initial sobriety test and blew, you know, over 0.08. But now with this new law, the lower threshold, he was, you know, within the DUI standard. And now they have sort of teeth to prosecute him. And they did. He's charged with DUI.
Okay. I think, am I right that in your article you spoke with this man himself and got his reaction to the fact that he was charged?
Yeah, I did. I was actually very surprised that he called me back, but he did. He's from Wyoming, and he said that he didn't even know that this new law had taken effect. He was actually on his way back to Wyoming when he was pulled over. And it was kind of a weird situation because the troopers didn't pull him over because he was swerving, you know, or doing anything that might signal that he was drunk. It was because he and his girlfriend had gotten into a fight earlier that morning, and she had called the police saying that he had hit her during the fight, and it was kind of this like struggle for the keys in the car. Apparently she had taken the keys, and he said that, you know, he hit her in the act of trying to get his keys back to his own car. And so anyway.
Okay. And then they pulled him over for that reason and discovered that there was some reason for them to administer a blood alcohol test.
Yeah. And so they apparently could smell alcohol in his breath, which he admitted, you know, he had been drinking the night before in Salt Lake City, didn't sleep as long as he wanted to in the morning, didn't have anything, you know, to eat. And so he told me, you know, I thought I would blow some numbers, didn't think it would be, you know, within the DUI threshold.
Part of what this is bringing up is whether or not law enforcement is doing anything differently, meaning enforcing things differently as a result of the new law that moves it, you know, makes it a lower threshold under which you can be charged with a DUI.
Yeah, and they say they're really not doing anything differently. The standard has always been impairment. So, you know, if they see you swerving around, you know, and you blow, you know, whatever you happen to blow, if they think that you're impaired, they're still going to arrest you. And that hasn't changed, they said.
Matt Cannon?
One thing that I'm looking to see is what happens when there's a checkpoint.
Right.
Before New Year's Eve, there was a checkpoint in Salt Lake City where they pulled over 550 people or something like that. And they had one person who was arrested for a DUI. Well, that's where it's not just impairment. That's where if you get pulled over and everyone's tested, you might get caught for not because you were swerving, but because there's a checkpoint. So that's one thing I'm keeping an eye out is when the next one of those is.
Or what about, I mean, I guess I don't know if this would even be something that law enforcement could do, but just waiting at the, you know, nearby a bar and somebody comes out who had, you know, depending upon their weight and et cetera, had the one drink and got into the car. You, Peyton, spoke with a Highway Patrol official who touted fewer DUIs actually on New Year's Eve or the morning of New Year's Day. And said that maybe this law was part of the reason for there being fewer DUIs. And that's, you'd kind of almost think that the opposite would be true. Why was he saying that?
Yeah, so last year, well, okay.
Yeah, the change of 2017 to 18.
Yes, yeah. So during that time period, the UHP arrested 46 people on suspicion of DUI. And this year it went down to 29. And so the kind of talk about this new law is that the people that were responsible in the first place, you know, who wouldn't get behind the wheel after one drink or two drinks or whatever, they're still those people. And then you have the other people, the chronic drinkers or whatever, the people that always get behind the wheel, they're still going to get behind the wheel. And so you look at the UHP, you know, numbers that they put out, and most of the people that they arrested for DUI were still above that 0.008 threshold. So.
Okay. Right. Except for this now, this at least one person, and there may have been more since then. You know, the kind of context or the backstory here is that Utah is the first in the nation to have this new threshold or to enact this such a strict threshold. And there's a fear from a lot of residents of Utah who are not members of the predominant faith, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, that this is actually about legislating morality as opposed to, more, you know, legislating good public policy. And, you know, critics, and maybe I can bring Matt Cannon in on this, have pointed to the University of Utah or to research done by the University of Utah that shows driving with, you know, a handheld device can be just as dangerous as drunk driving, but that lawmakers have rejected legislation to ban talking on a handheld device while driving, but have at the same time, enacted this 0.05 new strictest in the law, in the nation DUI law.
I mean, that debate comes down to what's the point of the law. Now, obviously, drunken driving is a bad, bad idea, should not do it. No one's arguing that you should do it.
Of course not.
But it's about impairment, as you said. It's, can you control your vehicle? And it's about saving lives. At least that's what lawmakers said. Well, if there's research that says talking on your cell phone is as dangerous as driving drunk, then maybe that's something to keep an eye on. The legislature has had bills. Representative Carol Spackman Moss from Holiday, a Democrat, has been pushing this legislation for a few years now. We do have, it is against the law in Utah to talk on your cell phone, but you can only be pulled over if you do something else wrong. Hmm. And what really has happened is that no one gets pulled over for that. There's very few cases where you see someone get cited for this. And so what she's trying to do is make it a primary offense where you can just be pulled over for having your cell phone on your ear. This has got a lot of resistance among pockets of the state legislature who believe it's infringing on someone's personal right to be able to talk in their car. Hmm. But I think that's where, you know, as you said, there is a debate. Robert Gerke, our news columnist, has looked at data, and it, you know, there is not a lot of data supporting that there have been cases where people died where their blood alcohol level was between 0.05 and 0.08. It doesn't happen very often, and when it has happened, there's been a lot of other extenuating circumstances, as in they were crossing the street in a crosswalk and someone hit them, or they had methamphetamine in their system as well as a little alcohol, where there are other things that could have played a factor. So the data's not been there, but on the national scale, the National Transportation Safety Board in Washington, D.C. has really pushed this 0.05 law, wants other states to adopt it, and believes they have data that this would save 1,500 lives every year in our nation. We haven't seen that data in Utah that supports that, though.
Peyton, the person you spoke with, from, I think it was Highway Patrol or who, pointed to sort of the social consequences. The fact that there were fewer DUI arrests on New Year's Eve, for example, was because people were scared. Basically scared into not getting into their car. And that could potentially be a reason that happened. Is that right?
Yeah. He was saying that he called it a social faux pas of getting a DUI. It's embarrassing to get a DUI. And also he pointed to the prevalence of rideshare services like Ride and Lyft. More people are using those. And then with the sort of media campaign around 0.05, maybe more people had this, on their minds. And so even if they had, one drink, they're not going to get behind the wheel. Unless, of course, you're this 21-year-old from Wyoming who says he didn't hear about it at all.
Right. He was just in the dark. Matt Canham, you mentioned Representative Carol Spackman Moss and her attempts to get, speaking of impairment, get the handheld devices while driving legislation passed. Is she pointing to this 0.05 legislation and saying, hey, we can do that. Why can't we do mine?
She's not. Okay. She acknowledges that that is something that other people have brought up. She's acknowledged that that argument has brought more supporters to her legislation, but she fears a backlash if she uses that argument in the House of Representatives. She knows her colleagues better than maybe we do, and she believes that saying, well, if you've legislated tougher DUI laws, legislate this, she thinks that will stiffen their resolve against her bill. So essentially, she's trying to do a data-driven, law enforcement-based argument. She's trying to get the law enforcement community to support her idea and say, here's what the research shows. Let's do something for safety and just leave the DUI argument out of it.
It's interesting, though, to address the fact that there is a parallel to be made there. You've got University of Utah researchers who are doing driving tests with people on phones saying this is just as dangerous as drunken driving, but we're not legislating that.
It is weird. And also, which is even more interesting, is the researcher, David Strayer, has done this work for years, also doesn't like her bill because he doesn't think the hands-free devices that people can use, Bluetooth, either within their car or something, other devices, makes it any more safe. He says his research shows that hand-free devices are just as distracting as handheld devices. The argument goes that if someone is in your passenger seat and you hit a scary part of driving, they naturally quiet down because they can feel that it's a tense moment too. If someone's on the phone, they don't know that, so they just keep going. And at which point you might get distracted at a time where you need all of your focus.
The various ways that we can distract ourselves and get in trouble as a result. Overall, Peyton, just going back to DUIs and DUI arrests in Utah, have they You know, have we seen a downward trend in DUIs? Has there been data suggesting that it's going up? I guess I'm coming around to where the 0.05 legislation initially came from, and the data that lawmakers may have pointed to get that passed.
Yeah, so the trooper that I spoke to pointed to some FBI data that showed from, I can't remember the exact year, I think it was 2014-ish, from around that point they'd been trending downward. It went from down, like 9,000-ish to 5,000-ish in 2017. So, I mean, it's quite a significant downturn, which they think has a lot to do with Lyft and Uber, honestly, but and not so, I mean, obviously not so much to do with this law because it didn't exist at that point. So
I just want to know if anybody's been arrested for a DUI on a scooter yet. That's the question.
I'm sure it's happened.
I'm sure it has. A reminder to listeners that you can join this conversation by calling 801-355-8255, or you can go to sltrib.com. We're actually going to head to another quick break, but when we come back, we are going to turn to some additional news from this week's Salt Lake Tribune. Call us up, 801-355-8255. Or post at sltrib.com. I'm Roger McDonough. You're listening to Behind the Headlines. We'll be right back.
Her name was Dulcinea, and she inspired one of the great stories of all time, The Adventures of Don Quixote. Dulcinea doesn't even appear in the novel, but just the idea of her fuels everything that Don Quixote does. Music inspired by this invisible feminine force on the next Performance Today from APM.
Monday night at 9 on Utah Public Radio.
Just when you thought you were done with 2018, we drag you back in, but it won't hurt. This week, a review of all the best news from the past year, Wait Wait style, plus never-before-heard segments and games, and a visit from LeVar Burton, who tells us the engines just can't take it anymore. I'm Peter Sagal. Join us for the news quiz from NPR.
Tomorrow morning at 9 on Utah Public Radio.
Welcome back to Behind the Headlines. I'm Roger McDonough with KCPW, and I'm joined for the remainder of this hour by the Salt Lake Tribune's Matt Canham and Peyton Harkins. This is our Friday morning news roundup, and you can call us and join this conversation. 801-355-8255 is the number, or you can post your comments at sltrib.com. Matt Canham, San Juan County Commissioner, he's incoming San Juan County Commissioner Willie Grayeyes. He's set to be sworn in on Monday, I believe, but he's facing some a resurgence of an old attack against him, which is that, according to his opponent, he's not a resident of the state of Utah. Can you tell us about this new attempt to keep Willie Grayeyes from taking his seat in San Juan County?
Sure. His Republican opponent is Kelly Laws, and Kelly has filed a lawsuit seeking to declare the commission seat vacant, reversing the decision, and creating a new election. This has been something that Republicans in the county have pushed, saying that Willie Grayeyes lives in Arizona. He owns a house there. He has a P.O. box there. He owns a horse there. He says, okay, but I also have a place in Utah, and that's my primary residence. His argument when we talked to him yesterday was the Mitt Romney argument. Mitt Romney has houses in New Hampshire and San Diego.
Right.
Why are you going after him for saying he's not really a Utahan if he lives elsewhere? He clearly has property elsewhere. He clearly spends a significant portion of his time not in the state. So why isn't he being attacked for not being a Utahan? Willie Grayeyes says it's because he's a Democrat and Republicans lost power in this rural Four Corners county, and they're upset about it.
Hasn't all of this been litigated already? I mean, in advance of the election, didn't we see, his residency disputed and then sort of dealt with in advance of this?
Yes.
Okay.
The county clerk ruled that Willie Grayeyes did not live in Utah, kicked him off the ballot. Willie Grayeyes sued. A federal judge ruled in Grayeyes' favor, put him back on the ballot, at which point Willie Grayeyes won by 159 votes over Kelly Laws, becoming the one of the three commissioners in this county. It is now a majority Navajo and a majority Democrat commission for the first time in the county's history. And there are the more conservative white residents who are not happy with this. And they have really fought against Gray Eyes, who has been a leader in the environmental community, who pushed very hard for Bears Ears National Monument, which President Trump has shrunk, and that's now in the courts. And they have just not given up this fight against him. But yes, a federal judge has already ruled that he did live in the state.
I guess, I mean, that kind of comes down to what's at stake in whether or not Willie Gray Eyes can take this seat. It's control of the San Juan County Commission.
Right.
And, you know, is this a commission that has sweeping powers to make decisions about public lands or environment? Can you give us a sense of that?
So the county commission, you got to think how huge this county is. In San Juan County is massive. And it's very sparsely populated. And the Navajos don't tend to live in the big cities. They're more in the rural areas. And so the governing process is focused on the cities. And so, you know, we'll see what Willie Gray Eyes and Commissioner Mary Bory, the other Navajo member, uses their agenda if there's some things they want to do locally. But there's also, as you said, the public lands issue. One of Utah's main arguments against the Bears Ears National Monument is that it didn't have local support. Hmm. Well, they pointed to the county commission as saying the people who are representing that area don't support it. Well, now they do. And that undercuts that argument. And now as this goes into the courts, and if you're going to say, well, this place had to go because it didn't have any local support— now it does.
Well, speaking of the courts, I mean, one of the reasons that that is the maybe precedent to Willie Gray Eyes and Mary Bory getting Mark Mary Bory, right, getting elected is the fact that the courts forced a redistricting of San Juan County as a result of basically violations of the Voting Rights Act. Is that correct?
That is correct. And just a quick correction, it's Kenneth Mary Bory.
Kenneth, sorry.
The Mary Bory family is very politically active, so right. Mark Mary Bory has previously been involved. But Kenneth is the commissioner. Yes, a federal judge ruled that the Republican majority gerrymandered the commission and the school board seats to weaken the power that the Navajo voters should have. They are in the majority of the residents, but they were carved in a way that diluted their power. The judge required them to recraft the boundaries. They would not do it in a way that he felt was sufficient, so the court did it itself. And it had the effect that you would think. When you have districts that the courts found were more evenly dispersed, the majority Navajo vote came through.
I guess, okay, what I'm wondering is whether or not the case that has been reopened or that Kelly Laws, who is the opponent of or was the opponent of Willie Gray Eyes, has now filed, is that going to be heard? Is there a potential that this could be overturned? And how long will it take us to know?
So this is filed in state court instead of federal, which was the last one.
Okay.
Willie Gray Eyes will obviously respond to this. I don't think this is going to stop him from being seated on Monday. I don't think it has that kind of clout behind it. But the one thing I would point out is that the state courts are filled by the governor, who is a Republican. They might be more amenable to a Republican argument in this area, and that's to politicize the courts. Maybe that's not the case, but it's a better shot in the state court than probably the federal court, as we've seen. But they have to have some argument beyond what we've seen that he acknowledges he owns property in Page, Arizona. He says it's the border area. People go back and forth all the time. And we see that in lots of border areas in this state and throughout the nation.
You know, you could imagine some people pointing to this attack on Willie Gray. I mean, I'm sure that the people who are doing it will say we're trying to defend and protect the electoral process. But others might say this is further evidence that there is a specific bias against Native and Democratic residents of San Juan County.
Yeah, and I think that's the argument that, well, I don't know if that's the bias argument. It's a partisan argument that Willie Gray Eyes is making. But other people are pointing out that this is, the Navajos have not had the power that they should have had for a while, and they're still getting fought on grounds that are kind of shaky. But the white Republican vote down there feels that they've been forced out of power unfairly by a judge, and they're upset, and they're going to fight apparently to the very end.
You know, I can't – this conversation, I feel like we can't end it without mentioning the fact that a previous San Juan County commissioner is soon to be – well, is already a member of the Utah State Legislature, was elected to the state legislature, and will have his first term starting in a couple of weeks.
He was the one who got booted from this very seat, Phil Lyman.
Phil Lyman. Okay. Listeners, again, if you want to join this conversation, you can call us up at 801-355-8255, or you can comment at sltrib.com. It's a little early, but let's turn to we'll do an extended version of our underplayed stories of the week. And this is the final segment of the show where we kind of touch on stories that maybe didn't get the coverage that they needed or, I don't know, tickled our fancy in another way. Peyton Harkins, who has been sitting here quietly for the past little while, do you want to kick us off with an underplayed story of the week?
Yeah, sure. So I think I'm going to do an audible for what I told you my underplayed story was going to be. And
okay.
So if you're interested in hearing more about DUI-related stuff, Courtney Tanner actually went up to one of the ski resorts before the law took effect. She went up to Snowbird and talked to a few skiers who were imbibing themselves. And she, you know, kind of talked to them about how the new .05 law would affect them. You know, do they still plan on, you know, coming to Utah to spend their money and drive around? And a lot of them she talked to said, no, they're going to go elsewhere because they're just kind of scared. You know, if they drink one beer and decide to drive somewhere, are they going to potentially, you know, get charged with a DUI, fine thousands of dollars, and have, you know, that kind of mark on their reputation?
I remember this story. I remember there was one particular family who said, no, we're definitely not going to come back to Utah as a result of that. That's an interesting pick for underplayed story. Mm-hmm. All right. I like your audible call from Peyton Harkins. Matt Canham, your pick, or maybe you can kick off one pick because we have a little bit of time. Okay. You can do more than one if you'd like. Underplayed story of the week.
I'm going to start with another Courtney Tanner story. This is about school grades. In the past, Utah has given letter grades to its schools, elementary, junior high, and high schools. So you get an A, B, C, D, or F. They dreaded F. Schools hated it, and they scrapped the process and now give them similar – I mean, they're not grades. They're words. They give you a sense of how they fit in different categories. These words are now exemplary, commendable, typical, developing, or critical needs. The dreaded critical needs. And instead of just one grade, they give it for a variety of things, which would be whether the school is taking care of English learners, preparing people for college, whether there's just general achievement in the areas that, you know, academic areas they're looking for. And so now you have a better sense of how your school does. Now, here's the problem. You have to look up every school one at a time on the state website. So if you want to compare your school to other schools in your area, you got to keep clicking one at a time, or you can go to the Salt Lake Tribune, where we've done the work for you, and you can compare all the schools, at least in the Salt Lake County area, all the high schools. You can compare all their past grades to their current rankings. It's pretty handy and accessible, and there's good work by Courtney and editor Sheila McCann.
All right, check it out, a database of school, I guess, yeah, how schools are rated in the state of Utah, and particularly in Salt Lake County. Do you have another pick, Matt, for underplayed story?
Of course. We can definitely do another pick. This is from Lee Davidson, and it's a story about a intersection that was a mistake. They call it a through turn, otherwise a Michigan U-turn. Essentially, you had to go through the light and make a U-turn to turn left instead of just going up and turning left. And drivers were confused because it's literally the only one in the area, and businesses were very upset because they thought it inhibited people from making those natural turns into their business. Hmm. It cost $700,000 to remove this intersection that turned out to be what looks like a failed mistake. You can get the details on that as well on our website now.
At sltrib.com. Check it out. You know, I have a million-dollar idea that I've been holding on to for a long time, which is the U-turn signal on a car. Because sometimes you're going up and somebody's going to go left.
A U-turn signal.
Well, and then you're, you know, maybe you're following too close or somebody's following you too closely and then they do the U-turn and accidents could ensue. I don't know. Check it out. We're going to try and get a U-turn signal launched here. Kickstarter funds accepted. For my part, I am going to go with here's one. I watched the this is not a Salt Lake Tribune story. I'm sorry. I watched the Frontline documentary on Facebook the other night and it's It said that 65% of Americans say that Facebook is their primary source for news. Yet there's been a concerted effort to manipulate the American public on Facebook, an arguably successful effort by Russian intelligence and by people who are making money to create inflammatory content. Anyways, it's not a Tribune story, but it's a documentary that is worth checking out. So do that. It's PBS Frontline. Check it out. Peyton Harkins, any final underplayed stories of the week before we head to a final segment with...
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Of course. So the one I was going to do before my Audible is by Sean Means. It was actually, I think, in the paper today. He spoke with a 94-year-old woman who'd been working at this Arby's in the Valley for a while. And it's like a fun little feature story. And then toward the end, there's just this crazy twist. And I think that everybody needs to... check that out and get their hair to stand up on the back of the neck like it did me.
Wow. I did not know that there was a crazy twist in that story. I saw it. I have not read it yet. I will check it out. Peyton Harkins, thanks very much. Peyton Harkins and Matt Canham, both of the Salt Lake Tribune, thanks very much for joining us today on Behind the Headlines.
Thank you.
We are going to wrap up today with Tribune religion reporter Peggy Fletcher Stack, who wrote about the changes that were made to the temple ceremony of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Changes particularly welcomed by feminists in the faith. Peggy Fletcher Stack, thank you very much for making time for this today.
Happy to do so.
The reason for this conversation is because there were some changes that were made almost by surprise to the ceremony, to a ceremony of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the temple ceremony. Can you give us an outline of the changes that happened there, Peggy? What is the fundamental change?
Well,
that...
let's first describe what the temple ceremony is.
Let's do it.
Which is essentially a ritual reenactment of the story of Adam and Eve in the Bible. So it takes participants through that story from being in the Garden of Eden through mortal life to the hereafter. And before this, in the temple ceremony, some of the language was very... unequal regarding men and women and the sort of promises that they make to God. And this change, though not a lot of word changes, but the sensibility of the changes was huge, which is to say now the ceremony asks the exact same thing of men and women.
And men and women are using the same language now.
Same language.
To make their oaths, their covenant.
Exactly.
As part of that temple ritual. Another part of this is that previous language that women used before this week was that they were to hearken to their husbands. And I guess hearken there meaning to listen or to obey, maybe.
Yes. It says, as Adam, the man, hearkens to God. So... in essence, it put, as writer, researcher Jana Reese put it in my story about this, it put someone in the middle between a woman and God, i.e. her husband. And now that language is all gone. And that was such a different thing for most Mormon women because in every other way, women... it is unmediated. They go directly to God through their worship, through their prayers, through their involvement in the church. So the temple experience for some women apparently was very jarring and disappointing because they had been taught theologically something else in their regular worship, and then they go to the temple, which is supposed to be the pinnacle of Latter-day Saint worship. It's a special place. Not everyone can go. You have to be deemed worthy to get a recommend. You have to attest that you live its practices. So it's a special place held out as the pinnacle. And then to go there for some women and to be told, yeah, you have to hearken to your husband the way he hearkens to God, was just very... disheartening to many young Mormon or young and old Mormon women.
You know, you mentioned some of the reactions that you got when you sought reactions to this change. What else are people saying? I mean, you talked about the sort of feminist element in your article, that feminist members of the church would be very happy, but of course it's not just feminists who are
right, exactly. I mean, I described it that way because these are activists who are thrilled, delighted, but all over social media yesterday there were the new wording was unrolled yesterday. So 2019, the first of the year. And all over social media, women and men, everyone was sort of exulting at this gender equality. Certainly some Mormon women and men didn't see a problem with it in the past. So that's, I guess, why I single out feminists, because the feminists were the ones who were saying, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if anyone you spoke with was upset about this. You know, maybe those husbands who aren't being hearkened to any longer.
I didn't talk to any unhearkened husband.
Just checking.
Only people, I mean, by and large, the vast majority of people who were posting about it on Facebook or on social media at large, which isn't an entirely representative sample, but it seemed to be pretty universally embraced and excited.
Hmm. Did the church say why those changes were made?
Oh, no, the church. The church leaders posted on the church's media site a simple statement about the fact that the temple ceremony has changed and been revised repeatedly over time from when it was introduced in the 1840s to today, and that this is all part of a, you know, continuing revelation. But they did not really mention any specific changes and urge people not to talk about them.
Hmm. So no sort of saying advocacy from within the church or anything?
No, like that. Yeah. Nor any, as you say, nor any real explanation as to why they made this change or what prompted them to make the change. So that part we may have to tease out over time. Good reporters, that's what we do.
That's what good reporters do, like Peggy Fletcher Stack. One final point, just in the last minute that we have here, your article suggested that there would be a likely surge in temple attendance because church members are going to be, I guess, curious to see
exactly.
what happened.
That was all speculation on my part.
I'm sure that it would bear out. Peggy Fletcher Stack, religion reporter with the Salt Lake Tribune. I really appreciate your coming in and telling us about this.
My pleasure.
That's Peggy Fletcher Stack, Salt Lake Tribune religion reporter. You can find her reporting on the changes to temple ceremony at the church, within the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, at sltrib.com, like all of the stories that we have been covering today on the program. And that wraps up this edition of Behind the Headlines. This show is a co-production of KCPW and the Salt Lake Tribune and is heard across the state on Utah Public Radio. Thanks to Jesse Ellis here at KCPW and to the team up at UPR for their help. You can find podcasts at kcpw.org or through your podcast app. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks again for listening. Have a great weekend.
This guy was big, man. You seen the movie Grease when they don't look like high school kids? Mario was like that. People would come to say he's a teacher, right? Like, no, he's a ninth grader. And I knew that sooner or later, I was going to be one of his targets.
Join us next time for the Moth Radio Hour. True stories told live from the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
Saturday evening at 6 on Utah Public Radio.
This is Utah Public Radio, a statewide service of Utah State University and the College of Humanities and Social Sciences. KUSR Logan, KUSK Vernal, KUSL Richfield, KUST Moab, KCEU Price, and KUSU FM Logan. Also heard online at upr.org.